From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast. Can I be basic with you?
Hello, hello. It is Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. My name is Jesse Carey, and you are listening to the Relevant Podcast. Here with me today in Nashville, Tennessee, is Annie F. Downs. Annie, welcome to the show.
Good morning, gents. We're already kicking it off weird. Let's keep going.
Also with me today, Eddie, the big cat, Kaufholz, coming to us from Gainesville, Florida. Eddie, how are you, my friend?
This is, could not be better. You hosting, you know, is my favorite thing. Enjoyed this
Everyone
on so many levels.
Everyone is in for a big time treat today. And finally, with us also in Nashville, the one, the only, the Tyler Huckabeast. Welcome
to
the show.
Hey, everybody.
Tyler. Oh, wow. Oh, Huckabeast.
Huckabeast,
oh,
yeah.
That's a cool now, thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
On the ones and twos, we have not Chandler, but Clark. Clark, welcome to the show, man.
Hey.
Now, Clark, you're...
Clark, you said indicating that is his first and his last name.
Clark. It's a very odd choice. Clark Filippo. Now, Clark, you are in the studio today.
I am.
And I want you to know that your responsibilities go beyond man in the ones and twos and making sure we all record fine and everything sounds good and queuing up sound clips. Your job is to laugh hysterically at most things I say, like Chandler would do. Make me sound funnier than
Noted.
I do. You understand.
Noted, yes.
So if you're listening, you're probably wondering, hey, why is Jesse not only hosting, but already botching this? Why does he have the car in the ditch when it just backed out of the driveway? The answer to the question is simple.
Yeah,
Cameron and Chandler are in Cuba right now. And my money is that Chandler's never returning home. I think the Cuban government
it's a deposit
trip.
They're
on a family vacation.
Not a vacation. They are not allowed to return to the States right now. We shouldn't even be telling
it's
you,
just
probably.
The two of them.
They're alone. They're scared.
Yeah, it's Chandler and Cameron just walking around Cuba together trying to figure
out
a way.
In all actuality, the whole Strang family has gone on, which I think is cool, to be an adult age and go on a family vacation. Like, their parents are there. It's the whole deal. So we're manning the podcast today. But I have a lot of fears that Chandler will somehow cause a diplomatic situation and will never be allowed to return to the United States and will also somehow be banned from Canada. He will be a man with no nation after this trip.
Because if there's anything we know about Chandler, it's that no matter where he goes, he's always keeping it real. And his version of real is not going to gel well with
the good people of Cuba.
It's just, I can't get into details, but it's not going to be a positive situation.
Yeah, well, but hey, listen, before we get into speculating wildly about the international incident that Chandler Strang will commit in Cuba and be forbidden to come home, I want to tell everyone we have a great show in store for the day. Hey, Johnny Swim is on the show. Maybe you heard him. They just released a new album, Moonlight. Hey, it's a killer album. Have you guys listened to Moonlight?
I have. I'm also loving, like, maybe you've heard of him. Yeah. You're just bringing out the flexes today on that. But, Johnny Swim, a band who needs no introduction. And if you do, maybe you should Google it, idiots.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know, maybe you dummies should know. They're called Johnny Swim, and they were on the cover of our magazine. Yeah. And they are awesome. And Michael McDonald's on their album. I hosted a family cookout this weekend. And
Did you?
On Easter Sunday. And I blasted the Johnny Swim album. It's a great backyard hanging out album. You know, it's one
How
of those.
How many people
that,
are at your kind of, because I always feel like you're the Carey family, Virginia thing is bigger than I expect it to be every time.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, at yesterday's gathering, there was only about a dozen. But I mean, it's not uncommon for those gatherings to have about three dozen.
Yeah.
That's a good size cookout.
We roll deep. Our cookouts roll deep, and it's all family.
What'd you cook?
This isn't all that interesting, but I did man the grill. I manned the grill, and I kept it pretty simple. You know, I feel like on the scale of cookout complexity at the top level, you have kebabs, because not only are you grilling.
Wait, top level is kebabs?
Lots of prep work.
100%. That's the most complicated, because it's a lot of prep work. You're chopping and skewering all these, this variety of like meats and vegetables. Then you got to cook them all and figure out how to get the temperature right. So I wasn't going to even play with that.
No.
So
Annie, I feel like you're confused, but this logic
is
airtight.
Can you tell me what's certain that all of you are wrong? The hardest thing is getting one piece of meat the exact right temperature. It's way easier to do kebabs. You're just cooking all the way through, and the vegetables are going to hang with you the whole time.
No, because then they're going to get too mushy, and then there's a lot of complexity to kebabs.
I'm not going to bend on this. Cameron isn't here to bully me. I'm not bending.
Annie, listen, I grill.
I don't think you've ever bent on anything. I just really think
you're
incorrect.
Listen, I grill at least during the summer, I'm at least once a week grilling. And Annie, I can tell you this. I don't believe in meat thermometers, okay?
You don't have to tell me that. I knew that.
I don't need a thermometer to tell me when my chicken's done. I will use my eyeballs and my gut instincts. And that's the only methodology I use. And it's never been a problem. Never been a problem.
Did you guys do anything for Easter that wasn't as boring as Jesse's story? Very
I thought Jesse's was cool. Wait,
I thought we were razzing around.
He never said the end of the story. He just complained about the ease of kebabs. We don't even know what he actually made.
Yeah, you guys got me all off on a kebab rabbit trail that no one wanted to hear. No one wanted to hear about. No one wanted to hear people argue about kebabs.
Clark, this is the service after Chandler would try.
No, we do. I'll say this. We do. We have like a weird family tradition, but I like it. It's an egg cracking contest.
What does that mean?
And everyone is responsible for bringing five boiled eggs to the cookout. Okay. You want to bring a backup in case you drop one, because that always happens. And how it works is everyone sits around the back porch, and a lot of times, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, there's money tossed onto the table. So there's a large pot. It's a winner-take-all situation.
Yeah. The rolling of dice.
The Carey family on Easter likes to gamble. that's how we observe. But you go around, and like Eddie, let's say you're sitting across the table. I point to Eddie, and you hold one of your boiled eggs, and I hold one of mine, and I smack the top of your egg with the bottom of my egg. Oh. Only one of those eggs will break. Okay, then you return the favor to my egg. You go around the table. It's the last person standing with the last side of unbroken eggs gets all the money.
Cool.
It was a real thrill. There's a trophy. There's a trophy with engraved names of the family.
This is very exciting.
The trophy. It's a large cup. And right now it only dates back to 2008, I think. But I'll say this: my name has yet to appear on
You've never won
a trophy. Yeah. Yeah.
Has anybody in your immediate family ever won?
Noah won this year. Noah won this year.
Really?
Points on the board.
I confiscated the winnings. But
I was about to say, what's he
going
to do with all that money?
Yeah.
Take it to kindergarten.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to go gamble at kindergarten. Did you guys do anything fun for Easter?
No. I mean, I played in the band, so that was fun. I liked doing that.
What, tambourine?
No, I played guitar and sang like a beautiful angel. Just very traditional Easter-y kind of thing.
No, did you lead when you say you played in the band? Don't be humble here, Eddie.
No. I am the second fiddle by all means, and I'm fine with that because we go to an Anglican church and there are about 13 or 14 different songs. It's just way too much. So I can't even begin to think about leading this thing. So, you know, I led and it was fun and the girls were all cute. We did a great thing on Saturday night. We get all the families together in Gainesville that are in town and just had huge cookout and hang out. And that was really fun and sweet. No trophies, which it's definitely a thing we should do. But we do a thing at these parties that I love. It's you pick a name out of a hat of anybody, of any of the people in the room that play a musical instrument. And then you pick the name of any song that you want. Like, you can just pick the name of any song, and then they throw the chords up on, like, they air play it over to the TV, and you just have to go with it and do the best you can. You and I, Jesse, especially, really enjoy watching a good train wreck. There is nothing nothing worse than, and I will say his name, Steve McCready, playing pretty much, when his name gets drawn, I just start, like, weeping with laughter.
And watch him play Old Time Road.
Oh. And just do terribly.
Annie, did you do anything fun? Do you have any weird traditions for Easter?
I have a great. Well, I was at church all day, but in between, we had one block of time that was longer than the rest of them in services because we had some mornings and some afternoon ones. And Huck, you're going to be so proud of me. So y'all know I'm on the teaching team in my church. It's me and two of the other people on the teaching team in my church got on bird scooters or lime scooters.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And we went. We went over the Jefferson Bridge, you guys, which is like, it's really scary. I was scared the whole time that I was going to fall.
There,
it
like
goes
lanes?
Over the like Cumberland River.
Yeah.
There are no lanes. I had to do it on the sidewalk. So you are right up against, you're scooting up against the edge of the river. I was so scared I was going to fall.
Is that your first time riding?
It was my first time riding a Lime scooter.
And it was it exhilarating or terrifying?
Was terrifying because of what the dudes made me do. Because they made me go over a bridge that goes over the grossest river in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have died if I fell in, but I would have been poisoned immediately.
Yeah.
Super. The impact wouldn't have killed you, but the follow-up
instant toxicity.
Water touching my body would have been the death of me. Yeah.
Or you would have gotten like powers or something. You would have been a mutant.
So we just scooted all over the place, and then we scooted back into the church parking lot when all the cars were coming in for the fourth service of the day. And we're ready to roll. It was so fun. I'm like a big fan of them now. I wasn't before. I feel like I've done the scariest thing I could do on a scooter, I feel like a normal street will be very enjoyable.
I never understood, because I've read online, like, cities are fighting back against the scooter epidemic. Like, you know, people want them out of their cities. Who cares?
Like, who cares?
Like, honestly, you could say, hey, listen, your city can get like a really sophisticated subway system that'll get you anywhere in town and beat traffic, and it'll be delightful. Elon Musk will come and put some weird tunnel in your town. Or there's just scooters everywhere that people can use. I'm choosing the scooters. Uh-huh. Like, since when did an innovative idea like that become such a nuisance? You know, like the fun police and city councils not letting anybody ride scooters they're the problem. They're the bomb.
Now, to be fair, I, as a driver, sometimes the people on scooters I'm scared of because I'm scared they're going to fall. As a scootie, would that be what I would be called? Yeah. A scootie?
A
scooter.
Sure.
No, yeah, that's right. That's
funny. Well, the
scooter
is the machine.
One who scoots, yeah.
Scootie now. Uh-huh. I was afraid I was going to fall in front of a car and it kill me.
And it happens.
Yeah. I do recognize the first thing they tell you to do when you turn on the app is put a helmet on. So it's not on them if my head gets
I have a friend who came over on Friday night. I hadn't seen him in a couple of weeks. And when he last time I saw him, he had a cast on because he had fallen on a scooter, broken his wrist.
Really?
And when I saw him, and that was a couple of weeks ago, and when he showed up at my house on Friday night, on Good Friday, he still had the cast on. And I was like, oh, that's taken a long time to heal up. No, separate scooting accident. He re-broke.
Really?
So I do think there are maybe some people. He's a friend, and I'm not going to shame him. His name is Cody. He's bad at scooting. And he's probably not the only one. So there may be some sort of maybe they should. I don't think like a driver's license situation, but clearly there is a range of abilities and skill sets when it comes to scooting that we need to take into account.
No, here's the last thing we need is another license, is another course you got to take that you have to get the government to approve you operate.
How many courses? There's driving a car and what's the other one?
This is true story. This is true story. My brother. Exactly. I don't
jumping
need
jumping out of an airplane.
Thank you.
You have to
thank
take
you,
a
Uncle
course.
Sam. I don't need you to tell me what I am. And am not allowed to tell my children actually happened in U.S. history. Thanks, but no thanks. Yeah.
I'm like, if I know the stuff, I know the stuff.
Listen, we all have WebMD and a farmer's almanac. What else do I need?
I know.
I can scoot with that knowledge.
Yeah, that's right.
No, this weekend, my brother he recently purchased a boat, and my in-laws were in town, and I wanted to take them boating. And
that's cool.
So he's
cool.
Like, sure. And he was like, do you have a boater's license? And I said, I don't believe him then. I do not believe that I should have to have any sort of paperwork to document my
brother.
Yeah. To document my ability to ride a boat. I'll roll the dice. Thank you very much. And guess what? I didn't know. It didn't even come up. It didn't even like there's no one out there checking the boater's license. You know, it's a pointless thing.
Until you get pulled over. Boats can't get pulled over.
Maritime law.
Listen,
when you're out there,
I will dispute.
As soon as you get out past the 100 feet out, floaties, you're international waters.
Exactly. You know
this.
What happens,
anything
Annie?
Goes.
If I see,
goes.
if I if I see those lights come on, and listen, I'm a live PD watcher. I know how these chases go. You know?
You and me both, buddy. You've converted me so hard into a live PD watcher.
I hit the gas. I hit the gas on my boat, and until I'm three, and I go straight till I'm 3 miles out. We're in international waters. Good luck. Yeah. You might as well have the Chinese government try to get me out there, because
you toss the kids out so you don't have that dead weight, and you just move as fast as you can.
My God.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine. They're not.
Noah's rich anyway. Just throw him overboard. He can.
Noah just came into a bunch of money. And yeah, I will be
figure it out.
I will be safely in international waters. That's the police. They're flying. There's like seven police boats with the lights flashing and me just rocking Michael McDonald yacht rock as I go through the international waters line.
Just your Nat's hat flies backwards. Your hair is just flowing.
At this point, I've unbuttoned my shirt. So just flowing and flowing.
Once you hit that 3 mile thing, it's an immediate stop.
Yeah. And I do one of those cool like turns and I spray everybody and look back at the cops and they just put their hands
just
up in the
wave.
Air. And he's there like, we'll get you next time, pal. Well, you got us this time, but we'll get you next time. You know, I just raised my...
You're not going back home. You're a man on the run. You're like Chandler and Cameron out there.
That's where Chandler and Cameron are.
They just pointed out.
They're heading due east.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, we got.
He is risen, by the way. Happy Easter.
He is risen.
Happy Easter.
Yeah. Joy.
Yeah, it was a good.
Did you preach, Annie? Did you preach or were you?
No. Mm-hmm.
I would have liked for you to preach. I bet you do a good Easter sermon.
Thank you.
I'm sure you do.
Annie, have you ever preached on Easter Sunday?
I haven't done Easter Sunday. Everybody, that's the, you know, Super Bowl. There's nobody who's calling out on Easter Sunday.
But here's the thing. Can I give my hot take on Easter Sunday sermons? This is a call.
Tyler, I know what you're going to say. Say it. Go.
Are you ready?
I know.
Okay, so Easter Sunday. And I get it. I want to say, first of all, I get it. I get why this happens.
Right.
But Easter Sunday is it's the low. Like, everybody's going to church on Easter Sunday. People haven't been to church all year long. It's been a year. I guess I better get back into church. You go in to hear a sermon on Easter Sunday. You sit down and the pastor, whoever's preaching there, is forced to give the basics, like the most well-known story. And if you know nothing else about the Bible, about Jesus, about being a Christian,
it's a layup.
You know,
oh my god!
Then
gosh.
You know this one. It's this one. This is a T-ball sermon situation.
Dear every pastor listening who took Monday off because you are so exhausted from all your exertion this weekend.
No, I know.
Sorry for what Tyler Huckabee just said.
We're all in agreement here.
I co-sign with Tyler because, like I said, this is the pitcher. This is batting practice. This is lobbing a meatball right over dead center home plate. Like, you know what you're preaching on, okay? Like, there's one story, and everyone knows it. It's impossible to botch this one. Like, if you just read the text, the story is so good. It's a man walking out of a tomb. It does not get any better than that. It's the greatest miracle of all time.
It can't be boring. It can't be boring. This is the Harlem Globetrotters doing an exhibition match against the fifth graders. Like, they're showing up
you're not going to take the time to dig in and do the 45-minute, like, oh, here's an interesting thing from da-da-da. You got a hard 20 minutes because you got baptisms. You got 13 songs a band's got to play. Yeah. You got a lot happening. You're basically just doing like, hey, here's a thing I read. There you go.
My challenge for
Easter Sunday 2020.
Yeah,
you got a year. Is I want to go. I want to and you call. I've got time. If you say you're going to do it, then I'll buy a plane ticket. I'll go to your church on Sunday morning. Like, give me something. Give me a little razzle dazzle. Right. Give me a little sermon. I'm like, oh, I didn't see that. Wow. I wouldn't have made that connection.
Wait, you're starting a new series on Jonah and the whale today on Easter Sunday. That's
I'm prepared.
Bold move.
Because here's what's true is the people who only go on Easter, they've heard the same sermon every time they've gone to church.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I would tell them, hey, listen, it's Easter Sunday. We all know what happened here. Okay. There's five books of the Bible that describe it in explicit detail. We're jumping into the seven seals of Revelation right now. The Gospels, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. And, you know, the
Book of Thomas.
Yeah, Thomas. That's Thomas the, recounts it.
It's not canon yet.
I wasn't calling you out. I was ready to learn from you.
No, listen, like, my
he's pretty into the Apocrypha, even though faith wise he has no reason to be.
I don't believe in the Council of Nicaea either. Them and their canonization.
There's a lot
process
that Jesse rejects about mainstream Christianity. We don't want to get into it too much, but it's pretty disturbing.
I have a couple extra canonized books that I have stumbled upon on the internet that are very intriguing, Annie. I will go no further.
Jesse, so it is the fifth book is the Gospel of Jesse.
That's right. And it says some pretty outrageous things I just don't think the world is ready for. And no publisher I've shopped
Chapter
it around
four
to.
It's all about shish kebabs.
Yeah, exactly.
And how difficult they are to really master them.
It's the commands of shish kebab, shish kebabbing, Annie. It's a fascinating.
Jesse sent it to me for some proofs to give it a little edit. And my honest advice to him was, you need to get on a boat. And you need to make your way towards international waters right now.
You need to toss the dead weight of those
church
you love.
The man will not let this stand.
Blessed are the portobello mushrooms, for they will top the kebab.
Don't think we can do this joke.
I'm staying way back here because I don't want to get struck.
Okay, well, listen.
Clark,
it's
up to you. If you think it was a play, plays, whatever you say.
All right, hey,
Mr. Important, you've got to continue the show, I know, but I got one thing to say.
Okay.
I'm preaching next week, which the only thing that's notable about that is I have, in the last 2 years, I'm always the week after preacher. So week after Christmas, who's up? This guy. There's 11 people there. I'm in. Yeah. So next week's Easter, get ready, because we are going to dive deep into the book of Jesse.
Okay.
I guess next time I preach.
When?
Mother's Day.
Oh, wow.
Guess who's always up on Mother's Day
sermon.
Okay, I know.
I love it. I can't wait. I picked it. I helped make the schedule.
Annie, I will be there. Cross my heart.
I would love to hear you preach on Mother's Day.
Okay, I know we got to move the show on, but I've always been curious about this because I've never preached. I preached a sermon in youth group, maybe, but I've never... Never as an adult to an adult crowd have I preached a sermon. So we have two people on here who regularly preach and are going to be preaching soon. Mm-hmm. Is your strategy, because I've thought about what my strategy would be, not that I have any plans to preach any sermons, but before I get into the text, do you guys do a little warm-up time? Do you get everyone or do you jump right in? Do you have material? I got some Casey Jones material from Ninja Turtles that basically...
You do. Yeah. You have some strong Casey Jones material.
The most low-key of all superheroes. I mean, the guy's a played against sports employee, right? I mean, he's fighting crime with used sporting goods. A hero we can all relate to. He has no powers.
His mask is just a hockey mask.
He has no powers. It's as absurd as there being a guy in the Avengers who shoots bow and arrows at robots. It's that absurd. you have a superhero who has the power of a supernova. Okay, you have a wizard.
God.
You have a literal wizard on the team. Okay, who can make realities collapse in on each other, and you got a guy with a bow and arrow. Okay, at least don't pose like you're part of the Avengers. That's why I like Casey Jones, because he just walks out there in catcher's gear and a hockey mask, and that's it. And the bad guys are like, okay, I know what we're fighting here.
Jesse, you know what I like about you? That was a tight two minutes. You got that tight two. If you get one more, you get that shish kebab thing in there, you got 3.5. You're going to be at 5 before the end
of
the summer.
I do have some DiGiorno material, and I've worked this out a little.
I've heard the DiGiorno material.
Okay.
Wait, I don't understand. What's the DiGiorno material?
Can we pause? I'm going to pause. I've got to tie up some threads here. Jesse, I believe, should be a stand-up comedian. This is what we're talking about now.
100%. That's what a type five is for anybody listening.
Yeah, but no, but this is my type five to open a sermon.
You and I are never going to answer how we start a sermon, so just let's not worry about that.
No, I do want to know, but I'm giving you guys these. These are gifts to open, because this is what I would do. Because I will listen, I will never be asked to deliver a sermon. I think we can all agree on that. So this material will otherwise be wasted.
I think you do deliver your own version of sermons very often here.
We're all recording it. It's right here.
Yeah, we record it.
I'm just saying no pastor would welcome me into their pulpit. And
all right, friends, we got a great next young comic up. He's doing his first set. Really good friend of mine. Okay. I love this guy. Jesse Carey from Loverland, Virginia.
How you doing out there today? So, DiGiorno Pizza, man. How about that slogan? It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno. Anyone ever hear that? They ever say it. Guess who ever thought that a DiGiorno was delivery. No one ever. Literally no one has brought a DiGiorno pizza out from the oven into the living room and be like, did I miss the delivery man? Was that a doorbell I heard? No one in the history of DiGiorno pizza has ever mistaken it for a delivery. Like, there's no need for that to be the slogan. Yeah. No crap, Sherlock. It's not delivery. I heard the preheat light come on. I heard that come on. They took 45 minutes to cook. No one's ever mistaken it for delivery. Okay, so I want to jump into the text here. If you can turn your Bibles to the book of Revelation, we're going to talk about the seven seals.
Oh, man. Jesse, to see you do stand up, that's a thing I would fly for.
I would fly for it too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you guys can have my Casey Jones or DiGiorno material. Annie, how do you start a sermon?
So there's two answers. One is if I'm at my home church, if I'm at Cross Point where I'm part of the teaching team, they see me on a regular basis. I don't have to do anything to warm them up because I'm part of the family. My weekends that I travel, I'm on the road. I usually do some sort of intro to make them feel connected so that we all feel like one people group. So then I can jump into it. So yes, if I'm on the road. No, if I'm at my home.
Give me an example of like an intro. Like you're making them feel like part of your people group.
I always warn people about how loud my voice is, okay. And I tell the story of when I had my tonsils out, and the doctor told me that while he was taking my tonsils out, he was going to do something about my husky voice.
Husky.
And so I always say, my joke on stage is, the truth is you shouldn't label anything husky, not even a 10-year-old boy's jeans. It's just not right.
That is true.
Husky is a lot of scarring here in that statement, Annie.
Husky is, can we just agree whether it's a voice or the size of a pair of Bugle Boys? Husky is an adjective that should just be retired. Unless you're talking about a breed of dog.
Because the irony, of course, is as a kid that grew up wearing husky jeans, they had a wolf on them. So there was sort of this like, hey, get moving. You can do it. But then the other part that they didn't do is the husky jeans were made out of like pure like a burlap on top of cardboard. They were immovable. So you're this fat kid that already has to wear jeans with a wolf on it that say husky, and now you can't move. They were the worst jeans.
And the thing is that for like, unlike other sizes, from my observation of like walking down the aisles of like a Marshall's, is that they have for reasons that are never made clear, like elastic sewn into the waistband on some. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, okay, that's just unnecessary. Just put on belt loops like any other pant, Eddie.
Because they kept that kind of like bunched waist, like on a men's swimsuit material. Like,
a little bit of a
diaper connotation, maybe. That's just not.
And I do feel like whatever jeans homeschoolers were buying, and I can say this because I'm talking to a former homeschool student. And Tyler, you can affirm this for me. Did homeschool parents shop at a place that all pants had elastic on the waist and that t-shirts needed to be tucked in? Was that the uniform, Huck?
Yeah, it was. It was actually the uniform. It was.
Only in the sense that they couldn't afford tube socks. More clothes.
Eddie, how do you open your sermons?
If I have to start serious, I will. Like if the content demands it, I will start serious. But I will usually try to find some reason to tell some funny story and really do a minute of stand up at the beginning of it. Because that's where I'm most comfortable is being funny. And then I can like ease into it. All my like IJM sermons, especially with IJM sermons, because they're so intense. Try to keep it a little light at the beginning because it's about to get for real here in a second. I should do what Annie does, because she's a much better preacher.
I will say this. Any church that wants to bring me out and will have a love offering for me.
You're going to regret this.
Yeah.
That will bring up a love offering. I will accept your invitation to your pulpit. I'm putting a call to pastors right now. I will deliver a sermon, and I will not be held responsible for what I've said.
And I just want to say a PS to what Jesse said, because a lot of people like are fans of yours and love you. He doesn't turn this off. This is what happens the moment he steps out of the plane and to the moment he's back on the plane. You got to know what you're getting into. It's very exhausting.
All right. Well, hey, listen, we got a lot to get to. You know what? Let's take a break before we jump into slices here. When I walked away, I left footsteps in the
it so you could follow me. And when I walked away, I left footsteps in the mud so you could follow me. It's so bad it holding water slips right through your fingers. We both end up drowning. It would hit the ground and then the path would wash away. Wash away.
You're listening to Kalani with the song Footsteps. And at the beginning of the show, you heard Sigrid with the song Basic. Hey, before we jump into slices, I want to tell you that today's slices are brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a crisp landing page, an eye-catching gallery, a sleek blog, or an online store, it's all possible with Squarespace. They have award-winning templates, customizable settings, and powerful e-commerce solutions, all without a single plugin. Right now, Squarespace is offering a Relevant Podcast listeners a special deal. You just head over to squarespace.com/relevant for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your site, use the offer code relevant to save 10% off your purchase of a website or domain. Eddie, you've used Squarespace before. Am I right?
Oh, many times for many different reasons. It's incredible.
What's your most recent website you built, Eddie?
Oh, just little changes to Eddie, just my own eddiekaufholz.com. But I don't have time to do it. And I really don't actually understand what's happening behind the scenes, yet it always just seems to work out very nicely. And I don't have a good idea for design. Like, I know what I don't like,
yeah,
but I can't conjure in my head, okay, I want to create this logo. And they just like make it all really tidy and beautiful. So I love it.
Yeah. Well, when I say like award-winning templates, like the templates really look professional, really sleek, and it's really easy to use, like Eddie said. So listen, if you're interested in getting 10% off your first purchase or website or domain and want to check out the free trial, go to squarespace.com/relevant. All right. It is time for
slices.
Eddie, let's let you kick it off today.
Well, first of all, I'd like to just call it Annie's little judgment of me. She's like, what was the last website you made? It was all it was all like, okay, cool, Annie,
that's
sorry.
That's not I what I was websites. Doing.
Since he's not
Cameron
here, I think we can all agree.
He tells us hilarious things that he builds in the middle of the night, and I was hoping that you were secretly doing that as well.
I think Cameron inflates the numbers of the websites that he builds. He said every week that he reads a Squarespace ad, he says he's built another website. I don't know. I want to see receipts on that.
Well, I have a plan. Maybe Eddie, we can get together and talk about this. But it's invite me to speak .com and it's for pastors who are wanting to go down in a blaze of glory. They've had it with a career in ministry, and this is how they want to go out, by inviting a real wild card to the pulpit for the pulpit. And I'll set that up. All right, Eddie, what do you got for a slice, man?
Listen, the three gentlemen right here on the show right now have some form of beard. And some of it would be, I think for all of us, it would be a little more than stubble. I shave my beard pretty tight. Huck, are you just unshaved or would you say you have a beard?
I would say this is mostly stubble, right?
Yeah, I think so.
This is like probably 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, good, nice. And Jesse, that's 20 minutes for you. You were clean shaving. Yeah,
I shaved as we were logging on to Skype.
Like the Santa Claus.
I often reserve podcast time for personal hygiene time. It's a lot of overlap.
Yeah,
I'm flipping nails. I'm using that little thread floss thing on my eyebrows, just flinging them everywhere around the mall.
Oh my gosh, that hurts so much. What you would never really? Be
Does
able
it
to
hurt?
Be threaded on a podcast. No. You would never be able to. You would scream the whole
time.
I've
said it before, but the most awkward, like, I don't, like, okay, so for people that haven't seen it, Annie, tell you what, you've actually had it performed to sound like. Yes. Tell them what eyebrow threading is.
It is literally plucking the hairs of your eyebrows one at a time using threads. So you lay down in a chair like you're at the dentist office, mm-hmm. and a male or female, stands above you and uses pieces of thread that they've kind of wound around their fingers and plucks out one hair at a time out of your eyebrows. And it is
horrifying. And why is it better than just like traditional like waxing like or I
it
guess,
doesn't put wax on your face. So tweezers. It's just like it's without any version of chemical or any version of and waxing can burn, you know, obviously it's hot wax. So there are times that if you have sensitive skin, waxing won't work because it burns you, blah, blah, blah.
I know we've addressed this before, but I think it's highly inappropriate. that they do this in mall atriums, like at the shopping mall, just flinging all, just flinging eyebrow hairs everywhere into the mall. Like,
I mean, I had it when I had it done, tears were just pouring out of the sides of my eyes, more out of like when you have a nose hair that gets plucked out, you know, and it makes your eyes water. It's that for 20 minutes.
I'm
going
to do it in solidarity.
It's so baffling to me that,
as an ally,
it's so baffling to me that that they've determined that the best place to perform this it's
is
hygiene
in front of everyone.
Is in front of everyone at a mall kiosk. It's like the people. It's like the people that get mall massages. Like I don't. I'm not comfortable with any type of massage, even when it's like in a spa or something. You know
what?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't. It's just uncomfortable. But the people who go to the mall with the intent of getting a massage that day, like, oh man, my back is really seizing up. I got to go to that massage place across from the Orange Julius where they're flinging eyebrow hairs everywhere. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Well, either of those have become mall kiosk things, you know? Like, both of those should be done. It's like getting dental work in the middle of the mall. Like, you lay down in the chair and you just get your teeth cleaned right in the middle of the mall. It's just right in front of the Spencers. It's just absurd. There's no need for that to be there. I don't understand who is going around malls putting eyebrow flossing stations and massage booths in, you know?
But, Eddie, beards?
I'm sorry. Go back to your beard.
No, there's we haven't missed anything. So the point
was
is...
Was that mostly the slice?
No, I don't want to insult anybody on the show, but I am about to insult a lot of people listening to the show. Because there is, of course, you know, men throughout all generations have had varying sizes of beards. But recently, there was a study done, and I can barely pronounce the name of the clinic, but it's in Zurich, Switzerland, so you know... It's totally accurate. Like, you don't have to worry about that science.
The Swiss don't mess around.
Those Swiss people, they know what's up.
So, for some reason,
I was unable... They're riding high on their cheese breakthrough for a long time.
So, for some reason, they were doing tests on MRI, like the bacteria that's left over in MRI machines. And the test was to see if people and dogs... could use the same MRI machine without fear of spreading too much bacteria. Now, there is not an answer in this article as to why that would need to happen. Well, the only thing I can figure is that MRI machines are extremely expensive. And so, usually there are or at least in Florida, there's standalone MRI businesses
right in the middle of the mall, get a massage and an MRI right outside the food court.
Getting it all taken care of. So so they started doing these tests to see about bacteria, and they found out something that was interesting. Now, people, the joke is, of course, you get food in your beard and it's all dirty. So they started doing tests on clean guys and clean dogs, and found that guys with long beards had significantly and shockingly more bacteria than dogs. The researcher in the study said, by comparison, dogs look extremely clean. And these are guys that are grooming, not this is a guy that's been camping for a week, whatever. Like, these are people that are very clean Swiss people. And it is finding that if you have a longer beard, you are really dirty, even compared to a dog. So the point
of
this,
dogs also clean?
The dogs are relatively clean. Well, they're a lot dirtier than all of us on this call, but they are way cleaner than dudes with long beards. So, Annie, I'm curious, does this change your opinion about dudes with long beards, or does it just confirm what you already felt?
Well, in my experience, in my personal life with dudes with long beards, I have never found them to be. Food drops in there all the time and they just wipe it with a napkin, right? Of course there's stuff
But Annie, what do they spend? Let's say you're out to lunch with a bearded, a hipster,
it's tuna salad sandwich.
He's eating it or a bowl of chili or something. And a big glop just rolls down the beard. You seem to complain that he's wiping it with a napkin. What would you prefer he do?
If that happens to me, it just wipes off my face and it's gone.
Sure.
Right,
if it lands in my hair, I have to go home and wash my hair. I can't just take a napkin to my hair and, and just wipe it point. And consider that
yeah,
clean.
Yeah, there's residue mashed potato in that hair
there's
forever.
Always, yeah, 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 yeah. So if I get something in my head of hair, I have to wash my hair. If he gets something in his beard, he wipes it with a napkin. That is...
Right.
That now, is the same item treated two very different ways.
Now, what is vexing to me and what doesn't explain why is that dogs, who presumably don't do any method other than just eat their food and roll around and slop and then lick themselves, like apparently
that's a pig. It sounds like you described a pig.
Or, yeah. But apparently dogs, even with their grooming habits, they're not getting a napkin out to wipe off whatever off their fur, are still cleaner than the guys with beards.
I wonder if I could take this science to next level. If I could call Switzerland and ask them about this, mm-hmm. I would say, are you talking about the dog hair around the mouth of the dog? Are you talking about like between his left front and back paw? Because I feel like we need to go face to face if this is going to be good science.
I don't want to make the jokes that I want to make, but I don't know what hair they were testing, but I'm pretty sure any hair on a dog would have been cleaner.
Well,
I feel like face hair is only fair to the bearded men, that it be face hair versus face hair.
Yeah, it's apples to oranges at that point. I do want to note that I do trust the Swiss, because as we've already noted, they've mastered, they put holes in cheese before anyone knew that was even possible.
How did they do it?
And no one even was like, you know what would make this cheese better? Holes. And the Swiss are like, I don't know why, but let's try it. Maybe people like it better if we put holes in it. And it totally worked. The other thing they've mastered is army knives. The Swiss know. Uh-huh. Here, if I was like drafted into the Swiss military, and they'd be like, all right, welcome aboard. Here you're going to start your boot camp training, but first, here's your army knife. And they gave me one of those tiny little red.
Yeah.
Like, what am I supposed to do with this? This is the military. This blade is like an inch long. It's literally an inch long. There's a corkscrew on here. Am I drinking wine? Am I decorking wine on the battlefield? Why?
Sure.
Why do I want this tiny, tiny knife with a Phillips head screwdriver on it? It makes no sense. Wait, Cymbeline IKEA furniture out there on the battlefield?
I always assumed that people in the Swiss Army get the Swiss Army knife that you used to see as a kid, like in the case that was like 4 inches thick and had everything.
Yeah.
I always assumed like that was reserved for them, because that's my ultimate gift.
It's got it. Like knife, fork, like utensils. Probably have a little mini MRI machine in there.
That's one you see in Sky. It's like the Sky Mall Swiss Army knife. It's very impressive. It's comically large, but it literally has every tool you could possibly need. Again, I don't know what military purpose they would serve, because all the blades are very, very tiny. And if it came to hand-to-hand combat, you're almost better going in with like a stick than a Swiss Army.
I have a Swiss Army jacket that I bought, and I think the same thing. It's very beautiful. Why would an army guy and a woman in 2019 need the same jacket?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because if I'm on the battlefield and it comes down to hand to hand combat, and I pull out the Swiss Army knife, and let's say I get a clean poke in. That's just going to anger my adversary.
That's 2 inches. That's a flesh wound.
Stabbed right in the liver by a Swiss Army knife.
And the guy would just be like, ow, man.
Seriously. we're thinking here, our context for this is the American military, who are, we're in wars all the time, all over the globe. The Swiss military, they're not thinking in terms of combat. They just need to like, I'm going to be like
parades.
Bored. I got nothing going on.
We're mainly a parade unit. We're going to get members of the Swiss Armed Forces calling and be very angry at us. So I don't mean this in a bad way.
I think it's a better overall like military to like just we'll if we ever decide to get involved in a battle, we'll arm you. But until then, this is probably all the self-defense you're going to need.
You literally have a utensil on your knife to decork a bottle of wine on the battlefield.
In conclusion, I'm not throwing shade at dudes with beards, but you are all filthy, but I still love you. So we're just going to have to, science is science. The end.
Tyler, what do you have for your slice, man?
All right. So this ties into a conversation we were having earlier about church, about how you kick off your sermons.
Yeah.
About how you really get the people interested in a sermon. And so I'll be especially interested to hear from the pros on this podcast here, Eddie and Annie. Give me some of your insights into this methodology. So this story comes to us from just outside of Columbus, Ohio, in a church called Impact City Church.
I like that name.
This was
Impact
City. And they made an impact with this story. This took place. This was their pre-Easter.
Tell me what city this is again. Sorry.
There is a name in here, and I actually had a tough time pronouncing it. Pataskala,
Indiana. Is that what you said? Ohio. I don't remember the state you
said.
Ohio. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. Carry on.
This took place in the youth group. This was their pre-Easter sermon situation. This was to get the kids excited for Easter.
Can I just throw a hypothetical right there? The youth pastor is assigned the pre-Easter sermon at youth group. Presumably, this is his chance to basically audition for maybe next year. I can get the call up to be
that's true.
To get the main get the glow. He's really trying to think outside the box here.
Yeah.
He's not starting off with, a tight 3 minutes of Swiss Army knife material. He needs
DiGiorno's. Had he brought the DiGiorno's, that may have been different.
He would be Andy Stanley by now. So what happened to this guy, Tyler?
All right. So this gentleman decided that the best way to get the kids an idea of what Jesus went through on Easter 2000 years ago was to give them a little taste of how Jesus endured the torture of being arrested before he was crucified. So first he lined up all the kids, high schoolers and middle school students, and said, "You can spit in my face and I will not retaliate." Again, no repercussions, no negative ramifications. We'll go through and spit in my face. And the kids did. And at this point, we're like, it's a little weird, but this is youth group. Like, weird things happen in youth group.
You do weird stunts with spit all the time.
Oreo and Gatorade communion. Yeah. I get it.
If I could go back and see a video of myself and things that I did in youth group, I would probably, they're probably blocked out. I'd probably be shocked.
Right. Yeah. Same.
I think it's all for the best that those are like tucked away in a dark area of my mind, waiting for a therapist to find a few years down the road from now.
When I inevitably commit a crime that requires me to.
But then he doesn't stop there. He lines the kids up again and says, "Now you can slap me in the face. It's harder. You can slap me, and I will not defend myself. I will not retaliate." And you can see, and videos started to circulate on Snapchat.
He totally thought he was doing a good thing.
On Instagram, on social media, of kids feeling very nervous about this. But a few of them tried to do it, kind of a Lord of the Flies situation, where a few of the kids encourage the ones who are less interested. And there's other adults in the room. In fact, the senior pastor is also there. but he just doesn't
intervene.
He's just laying low.
He doesn't
this story.
Get involved.
And I bet this youth pastor listens to the show and he hates that this is happening to him too.
Well, I just approach it for youth pastors out there. Here's a pro tip for youth pastors. If you're setting up some sort of sermon illustration or a game that's very elaborate, ask yourself, does this have the possibility of becoming national news? If the answer is yes, you might want to find something else.
So, well, half the time, if the answer is yes, they're like, "Let's do it." Yeah, exactly. That's a problem.
But it escalated. It got kind of disturbing from there.
It didn't even stop there, unfortunately, because then the pastor produced a steak knife and told the kids that they could cut him, and he would still not push back and retaliate.
Are you joking?
But this really happened. One kid did take him up on this, and he drew blood. And it was about at this point that parents started to see some of the social media.
Luckily, it was
videos.
Just a Swiss Army knife. So the
wound was literally less than an inch.
This is unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. It is unbelievable.
Oh, I can't breathe.
The videos are still out there.
Fortunately, it was a Swiss Army knife, and the kid accidentally stabbed him with a nail file, which, again, if you're out there on the battlefield, you need to file them nails. Don't worry.
This
you got a little
end,
thing
right,
right
this
on
This is
there.
As far as it went, right?
This is as far as it went because then parents started to show up to collect their children And
did the guy lose his job?
Take them away. Well, he has not yet lost his job. There was a video apology. Police were called. They did not find any criminal. There was no evidence of any criminal activity. But the senior pastor and this associate youth pastor both had to deliver a video apology in which they said that it was it was intended to communicate a message about Easter, and things, as you can tell, went a little bit off the rails. And I think this is not the only story that certainly not that any of us have heard about a youth pastor who, or really any type of youth worker or a church pastor who tries to, who things just get out of control because there's this idea of escalation in youth groups where you got to keep the kids excited. You got to give them something to feed their attention depraved little minds. And I think this probably goes out of control. You don't need for there to be actual blood drawn for things to be off the rails. And I don't know what sort of training is involved in a lot of youth groups. I don't know that every youth group has necessarily training about that, but it does seem like an issue that isn't thought about a lot, about what kind of what people who work in youth groups should have to go through, how much training they should have before something like this happens.
But well, plus, like the point too, it's like, listen, these kids are like in high school, right? You don't need, like you said, some elaborate stunt to, you know, communicate the horrificness of the crucifixion. I mean, they're capable of understanding.
Watch Passion of the Christ. It's there. Yeah. You can see it.
Yeah. And these kids go to school. Like they go to English club. They're reading Jane Eyre. You don't necessarily need to having to sit through some lessons.
Listen. But I will say, and I'm not defending the person, clearly wretched judgment. I mean, it was like this, there's almost no, it's almost inexcusable.
Yeah.
But there is like staying on that treadmill of week after week, trying to get kids engaged in any form, just to listen even a little bit is a really, I mean, I think the job of a youth director is brutal. I don't even like volunteering. Like it is just so brutally difficult because you're just like, who cares when you're in middle school and high school and you're intrinsically kind of selfish. Even good kids are kind of like just into their own world. And so to combine the passion of trying to get someone to understand the meaningful nature of Holy Week and the season of Easter, combined with just the exhaustion of trying to get a middle schooler to hear something, like it could be a little, I can see the beginning of the on ramp to crazy making. Yeah. This is way too far, clearly, but I'm like, I
feel bad for him.
I understand that. I get a little bit of it. But also, it was
I think you're explaining that perfectly, Eddie. I mean, I feel bad for, he made a very bad decision. This is dumb on the youth pastor's part. And the idea that the senior pastor was in there, that's when push comes to shove in this story. That's the part I have the least sympathy for.
Right.
Is the senior, why didn't he stop? What was the meeting that happened before this event that everybody went, let's go for
where were the youth pastor with in the pastor room? He's like, so at that point, I'll pull the steak knife out.
And everybody's like, wow, all right. That's a great. Yeah, that probably
really
be.
Yeah, let
him
really, really, really slice you good there.
I've got to also say one little funny point to this. I want to be careful because these are still, it's not really funny, but these are like still real people.
Yeah.
That all of the kids declined except for one. It makes me
He lives forever in infamy of every other student in that youth group.
That kid is either there's that's just a
and he was very eager. He's very eager.
I'll do it.
I'm in. I'll stab it.
Is he eager? Okay, so here's the counterpoint. What if he's the kid that like is deeply discipled by the youth pastor? He was like, okay, I'll do
really
it.
Getting
like
dark.
He's like, I trust him. That's true.
One of my children is an intense rule follower to the point where it's like, no, you gotta think independently. You don't
slice your youth pastor.
You don't just because the youth pastor. So I couldn't see her going to that extreme, but like it could be just a really good rule follower kid.
Yeah.
But either way, that kid is not to be trifled with.
It's like the
he's not to be trifled with, or he's Ron Burgundy.
He's got the taste of blood. It's just like why they have to put down alligators after they bite people in Florida. It's like once they get the taste, that's it.
Yeah, it's like the Stanford prison experiment, though. Like, some people honestly will, if they think it's a person in authority, do whatever they say. Well, yeah,
well,
but I do think the kid that voluntarily willed a steak knife in church to draw blood to their little cause. I'm in.
I love that. Next week, a youth group, like, he just walks in and everybody's playing foosball and stuff, and the youth director's like, Hey.
Hey. Listen, we should talk about what happened. Huh? Yeah.
They were just going to do dodgeball.
Next year at the lock-in, we're not going to, I'm canceled all knife-related activities, so that will not be a part of the lock-in. All right, Annie, what do you got for us?
I'll make mine quick. It's a good one, though. I like it. Are you guys, can we go around the horn? Are y'all morning people or night owls?
Morning.
More of a morning.
Yeah, I'd say morning for sure.
Yeah, me too. We all are. That's funny. Yeah. So there's this new study that's come out that is talking about the difference between morning people and night owls and how our brains literally function differently. Hmm. How there is something to a person. A night owl, they determine, is someone who goes to bed around 2:30 and wakes up around 10:15. And a morning person goes to bed around 11 and wakes up around 6. Hmm. And so what I found really interesting about, the reason I wanted to bring it is I wanted to hear what you guys were. But also, the interesting part is that a night owl's brain kind of peaks at 8 p.m. and a morning person's brain kind of peaks at 9 a.m. And what this whole article is talking about is our need to get rid of our traditional 9-to-5 day. Hmm. Because no one is peaking in their brain work from 9-to-5. And so, in fact, in this article, it says that only 6% of the people in the UK work from 9-to-5. A lot of them do 8-to-4. Hmm. And now there's even a bigger push to do 7-to-3. Wow. The people would rather, morning people would rather get up, get to work, get going in the morning, and be able to leave and have their whole afternoon. And then night people are kind of doing freelancy jobs and doing things where they can start whenever they want during the day and work until 8 or 9 p.m. and then stay up and still have a whole life after I'm long asleep and carry on into the morning. So I used to teach elementary school, so I had kind of a 9-to-5, but we also went 7-to-3. So it was just way easier for me.
Yeah. I used to teach too, but there's a steak knife incident. Anyway, sorry, Eddie.
My circumstantially, just because of Brian being in school all the time and studying all the time and me being with the kids at different hours of the day, I start my workday now at 7:15. And like, what I can get done between 7:15 and 9 o'clock is about equal to what I get done through the rest of the whole workday. Like, it's just like I can write pages and pages that early in the morning. And it's just been, it's remarkable. Like, I would love it. But I understand how that doesn't work for like school schedules and in practicality. But man, I totally, 9-to-5 are like some of the worst hours, especially like 12-to-3. That is just miserable. Nothing, even if it's not like happens. A big lunch. Go ahead, Jack.
But that's why in like some cultures, like, it's literally get a break, you know, like in, you know, Spain or in some Central American countries, you know, there's siestas. Like in the middle of the day, you literally get a couple hours break, whether you want to have a long lunch or a nap or do whatever. People recognize, hey, that's kind of a dead time, you know, when it comes to like productivity. Is it like agrarian reasons that we have like a 9-to-5 work schedule, or is that like post-industrial? I don't know.
I think that's got to be post-industrial. Yeah, but I don't actually know.
Well, like daylight saving times, that's here because of a holdover from agrarian, you know, when most people worked outside and they needed, you know, I don't know. It does seem like, you know, the whole generation that is in the workforce right now inherited a schedule that might not be, you know, the most advantageous for productivity. So that's interesting, Annie.
But also at the same time, you'll know in the 1700s, they tried to move the calendar to a 10-day calendar instead of 7, so that people could work for 9 days and rest for 1.
Oh.
And they thought it would increase productivity.
Yeah.
And it actually increased depression and suicide and all these other things. And so they went back to a 7-day calendar.
What did they call the other days?
I don't know. I just did. I was reading about it when I was reading about Sabbath, and the book was talking about how when they tried to, how the uptick was not an uptick in work, it was an uptick in depression.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, Eddie, maybe they just kept looping them.
Yes.
Well, there's
been some studies that say that productivity actually goes up the less amount of time you have, which is why some companies are moving to 4-day work weeks.
Yeah.
Because if you feel more limited by the amount of time you have, you're going to be more feel more pushed to get more done in a shorter window of time. So a few companies, my wife's is thinking about doing it right now. And if they do, I'm switching jobs.
You're like, I'm out of here. Yeah,
moving that direction.
I mean, I love working under pressure. I mean, I don't love it, but I get it done.
I
get more done.
Yeah, same.
I get more done.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, Annie. Yeah. Well, hey, that was a great slice there. That was a really good one to end on. All right, well, that'll do it for slices. Next up, our friends, Johnny Swim. But I've been cheating through this life. And all its suffering. Oh, Christ. Am I good for nothing? Wes and his wife are full-time musicians living in Nashville. As the parents of two young children, they knew that they needed to find a new healthcare option that didn't carry the expense of traditional insurance, especially considering their unique employment situation. When one of their children needed a heart procedure, they knew that they had made the right decision when they joined Samaritan Ministries.
I just started looking into more options and then really just looking more into what insurance really is, it being a for-profit business, kind of how that all plays out. And then really my wife and I just started praying and wrestling through what we wanted to put our money toward. And then we just really felt like Samaritan was going to be a good option given our convictions. And it's proven to be exactly what we thought it would be, which is hard to say about a lot of things nowadays. Usually if something's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. But we found Samaritan to really be exactly what we thought. It's been great.
Having, you know, you mentioned before you're married, you're on traditional insurance. How is the experience of, you know, being a part of Samaritan Ministries different from, like, let's say, you know, just an average time you went to the hospital before you were married and were kind of doing the traditional thing?
I think the biggest difference is you really sense the ministry dynamic in it. Before, you know, you'd break a bone or you'd go to the hospital or whatever the need was, and you either pay a copay for a visit or you worked it out with insurance and submit it to them. This time you feel a little bit more of what the actual need is with Samaritan, but then you also see God provide for that through the people in the ministry. I mean, like with our son, I think we had 65 people send their shares to us to provide for that heart surgery need. And so we got 65 notes of encouragement praying for our son, people speaking into his life, even though he's only 6 months old, believing for, you know, a full recovery and healing. And so just knowing that you have a team and really a family of people behind you, that's a huge difference. I mean, when you have to go to the hospital, it's never a positive thing. But with Samaritan, it wraps a positive bow around it, so to speak, because you have people who are praying for you.
If you would like to learn more about how you could be a part of this ministry helping each other with healthcare, visit SamaritanMinistries.org/relevant. You're listening to Vampire Weekend with their new song, This Life. Well, we're very excited that Johnny Swim is on the show today. As you know, Abner and Amanda Ramirez just released their brand new album, Moonlight, which features a continued evolution for the singer-songwriter duo. Along with the Americana-inspired ballads they've become known for, the album features catchy, pop-fused songs and even a collaboration with Michael McDonald himself. Our own Tyler Huckabee recently spoke with Abner and Amanda about the new album. Here is a part of their conversation.
So let's burn the bridges down. Let's burn the bridges down. Light them up, no turning around. No escape through the ashes now. Let's burn the bridges down. Let's burn the bridges down. Light them up, no turning around. No escape through the ashes now. Let's burn the bridges down.
Do you ever wish that you all had a little more of a, because I would totally agree that you don't have an easy genre or box that your sound slides right into. Do you ever kind of wish you had one of those, something that would be a little more, oh, this is, we know what we do here. This is an easy one. We're a rock and roll band, or we're a soul band, or we're pop music.
Never once.
I will say that the road is longer when you don't have something that you fit into, you know? But as long as you're okay with having to kind of make your own path, then, which we you know, get our jollies off of doing that.
So. Nobody's, even if we had a style that was so easy to describe, it wouldn't really make the path much different. Because everybody's life, everybody, whether you're doing music or you sell insurance or whatever, everybody's life, regardless of how many people have the same job title, is bespoke to them. It's custom, the opportunities, the people, all the millions of nuances that occur every day that make your life just so much different that nobody could ever copy. It's just, for us, we can't even fake it. We can't even fake that we have a lane with other people, yeah. Even though, I guess what I'm trying to say is nobody shares a lane anyway.
Yeah.
Everybody's, you know, finding their own unique path, discovering the life that they were meant to live. And for us, I don't know how I got all the way there. You just wish you played. You could say you played pop music, but here we are. I've never wished we could just say we were some genre.
The last time with the God, Michael McDonald, on it, which I love, and which is great. And I couldn't believe how much it worked. I obviously want to know how the song came together, and then I want to know how Michael got involved.
Man, we were on tour with Need to Breathe last year, and their guitar player, a guy named Micah Pringle, wow, look at me, Micah Nichols. Micah Pringle's another friend of mine. Micah Nichols played guitar with them. And during sound check, I would sit out during their sound check sometimes, and Michael was playing these chords. And I text him even while he's sound checking, like, dude, what chords are those? What song is that? I want to listen to that song because it must be a song. And he texts me back, like, no, it's not a song. It's just some chords I'm playing. Oh. So that day, we were in Seattle. We went and sat by the tour buses, pulled some chairs out, and we started writing the last time. And one of the first things we wrote, was the opening line, which is my favorite line, because really the song. It's how do I say that? The song's about the first time I ever saw Amanda and how I said out loud, that's the girl I'm going to marry. Mm-hmm. And I said it to a girl that I was dating. And so I got dumped.
Yeah.
But I never dated again until it was Amanda. And so it was the song about that tension of waiting. I saw something, and I really did. I saw something that was worth waiting for me. And I never dated another girl until Amanda. And so we started singing. But I can if it's for you, if it's for you. And instantly I was like, oh, that sounds so much like Michael McDonald. We got to keep that. That sounds like so, like, such a tip of the hat to Michael McDonald. And then that grew into, can somebody reach out to Michael McDonald for us and see if he would sing on the song? And he wrote right back and said yes.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we went up, we went up to Santa Barbara where he's at. We rented a house. Malay, our producer and dear friend, is also a brilliant chef. Malay made a really fancy lunch for us all. Mike came in, and we sang. We cut vocals. We cut Mike's vocals as we were overlooking the Pacific Ocean in Santa Barbara, and I was having a Bellini or something, and it was just perfect. It was like exactly what I was hoping it would be.
Do you still, you guys have had a pretty illustrious career so far. You've worked with a lot of great talents. Do you still get a little like antsy when somebody of the Michael McDonald caliber comes into your lives?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think we all had like a small moment of panic when he walked in because he came early. And a friend of mine was coming up to kind of help with our kids while we were working. And so she walked in and he was there. So she just was like, oh yeah, come on in. Like walked in. So I was expecting her to walk in and she walks in with Michael McDonald and we were like, we were all just kind of like, oh, hi. Like, didn't really know what to say or do. you know, it's always a thrill. It's always a thrill.
Last song I want to ask you about, and I would be loath to not mention this one because I feel like we should really get the story behind the title track. Why did Moonlight end up being the song that you chose to use as the title of the album, and how did that one come together?
So for us, the album Moonlight, a lot of people approach an album, a project, and there's a theme already in mind. For us, it really is a journey of, it's not self-discovery, but it kind of is self-discovery. Albums for us end up being very much markers of where we are in life right now, mm-hmm. when we made that album. And so as we write Moonlight, we kind of get to discover, oh man, that not just the song, but the whole album. I guess this is what we're thinking about. We're thinking we've all gone through the phase in life where everybody's getting married. All your friends are getting married. And then you fast forward 10 years and all of a sudden everybody's getting divorced.
Yeah.
And this theme kept popping to this, bubbling to the surface of the reality of love. Not the, what's the word we use? The reality of love, not the ideal of love. Everybody wants to talk about and sing about the ideal, hashtag goals, hashtag couple goals. Oh my gosh, they love each other so much. Just in general, like everybody loves love, right? But the reality of love that we so venerate in our culture is that it's not always the sunshiny, beautiful top of the mountain experience. The real love makes you hurt more than you've ever hurt before. Mm-hmm. Opens you to the opportunity of being crushed like you've never been crushed before. That's real love. Like when a man and I said I do, till death do us part, we don't just mean until we get bored back out. We mean until toe tags and body bags. We mean until like decomposing next to each other in a box one day. That's the kind of love we're talking about. It's ugly, it's nitty gritty, and it's not always sunny. Often the most real part of love is what grows in the moonlight, what grows and what's harder to see, grows in the times that are maybe a little more uncomfortable, maybe a little bit easier to lose your way. And so the song Moonlight, it's about two friends of ours that we tried to connect, and they were really close friends. Then they hooked up, they made out, and one was mad about the other one. The other one was like, ah, you know, that's not for me. And it was about the soul crushing experience of that not working out. But for us, it became the title track because of that. It's like the reality of it, man. When you put yourself out, mm-hmm. even when you put yourself out there for a thing and you get a glimpse of something you'd be willing to fight for in a relationship, in a person, in a teammate for life, that's dangerous. It's dangerous to put yourself out there. And then, because rejection's a real thing. It's not always going to work out every time. You don't want it to, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it seemed like that, not just, it seemed like a good theme, man. It seemed like it seemed like it spoke to the theme of all the songs at once. Moonlight.
You'll be here long after the moonlight's gone. Say you feel. Oh, if I love since you met me, you'll be here long after the moonlight's gone.
Was it worth it? Should we take it back?
Does it feel, is it harder for you to write those kinds of songs? Because there are so many like love songs that we turn to give us the flip side of that, the part that we love, the part that we love to sing about, like the early days, the I Will Always Love Yous, that have really like defined our pop culture idea of how romance should work. Is it more difficult to write something that's more nuanced and more challenging like this? Because there's just not as much of a roadmap as there sometimes is for these other songs that have come before.
No, I think it's more fun to write about the nuance of it. That's, I think, something that we get excited about. Even like Souvenir mm-hmm. Is basically about having a relationship that is over and you don't want to be back in it. And you know that it's good that it's gone. But there's that part of you that still goes, oh, but that was nice. And like, I wonder what would have happened. But like, I don't really want to know, but that was nice. And I feel like that's nuanced part of relationships. That's what happens. That's, you know, that happens with friendships. It happens, you know, in dating and love relationships. I feel like that's what we kind of we thrive, I feel like, in those areas. Because I think for us, obviously being married and love, it's easy for us to write love songs to each other because we have plenty of fodder for that. But as soon as we get, you know, a hint of somebody going through something that's interesting and like you said, nuanced, I think we kind of jump on those opportunities to write about it because we love it.
For us, it's like I was in IKEA the other day and I was about to buy a bunch of fake plants because they're just easy. We're going to be out of town a bunch, in and out of town. Friends watch the house for us while we're gone. They don't always want the plants the best. Plants are going to die. So let me just get some fake plants, whatever. So I walk into the fake plant section, the imaginary gardening section of IKEA. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to pick out some plants to buy. And it made me feel like nauseous. It made me feel like kind of gross because there's something so beautiful. Amanda and I being in the garden together, being in the backyard, repotting plants, getting dirty, having to figure out how to, washing the concrete up afterwards. Amanda getting mad at me when I put Miracle-Gro on everything because she wants anything that we eat to be organic. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, but I want it to be huge. Like there's a journey in the reality of a thing. If you're tracking, if I'm making sense, the reality of planting real plants is messy. It's dirty. It's memorable. A fake plant's easy. That's it.
Yeah.
So for us to just write, take the world 100 times would feel like buying a bunch of fake plants for the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's sure that the beautiful part is one thing. That is a thing. But we signed up for all of it. We signed up for all of it. And we want our songs to represent that.
Oh, I sure don't want you back. We ain't no perfect match. But sometimes I imagine you here. Oh, we left until we showed. Then we tried to get us ran out. It's those little things that I hold dear. I made them my soul.
All right, you're listening to Johnny Swim's Souvenir, and that's from the album Moonlight that we're talking about. Great album. Go check it out. Okay, so it is time for a segment we like to call Ask the Cast. I put out a call on Twitter to have people send us questions, literally any questions they want. I've curated a handful, and I will throw them out to the team that we can field them together. All right, guys, do you guys want to start with a serious one or one that is goofy? What you let me know.
I mean, there's no way y'all are going to answer them seriously, so it's dealer's choice.
No, I'm curious because there are. Well, let's ease into this. Okay. David said, what is your go-to movie snack when at the theater, and what does it say about your theology? Okay, Tyler, why don't we start with you?
That feels like an article, a headline we would have come up with in the editorial meeting.
Yeah,
movie snack go-to. Yeah.
Okay, so I my answer is pretty straightforward. So what I do is I get two things. I get the popcorn,
yeah.
and I get the Reese's pieces,
oh.
and then I mix them together. Mid movie. Yeah. It's a thing. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, mid movie.
I create a cocktail. Yeah, yes. a little concoction there in the theater. That's what I do every single time.
Because
when
it gently softens the Reese's pieces. It doesn't melt them. It just softens them.
Makes them a little. Yeah, the heat warms up a little bit, so it's a little. You still get the crunch, but it's warm. What does it say about my theater?
I'll tell you what it says. It says that you have snowflake version, picking and choosing what you like and mixing them together and ignoring the parts you don't. We know your type, Huckabee. We are all too familiar. For me, I get a slushy. I get
what flavor?
A lemon.
You're a cherry
a
guy,
lemon
right?
Because I want lemon. Cold.
We don't
I want
even
something
offer that in Nashville.
Cold and biting, like the truth of Calvinism. It is. It's tough to swallow. It is literally tough to swallow. Predestination. I can't believe it. Oh, I'm choking
Add
it
that
down.
To your type 5, buddy. That's
okay,
good.
Annie, what do you got?
Oh yeah, go, Annie. Sorry.
I do snow caps and a Coke Icy.
Oh my!
Ooh.
Snow caps. I don't even know what those are.
They're like dark chocolate. Chocolate chips
with
white
little
dots.
White guys on them. Yeah.
So you like sweet messages that go down
a little bit of crunch
that go down easy. A little substance, but mostly very sweet.
I want sugar in as many forms as I can get it.
Yeah, very sweet. Probably the sermon has an acronym in it. You like acronym based theology?
That's right.
If you're gonna get through this, it's gonna take a lot of heart.
Yeah,
H happiness, E enthusiasm. enthusiasm. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Now go out. Every head bow, every eye closed. We're going to wrap this up. Okay, Eddie, what is your movie snack?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be 100% of the time Raisinets that I sneak in because I'll never pay for it at the theater.
Oh yeah. I'm a big food sneaker inner.
You're just not a Christian.
We've talked about this before because I've told you I don't even know what your religion
is. It just means you don't have a theology.
An atheist. That's the move. Hey, that's the move of an atheist who has no morals.
Taco Bell.
Yeah. No. Hey, sneaking food in. Obviously, someone who has zero morals and is a pure atheist.
And all the trash to sneak in. If you're going to sin boldly, don't go for the Raisinettes. I love them so much.
And they're quiet. No, you can't hear them in the theater.
I guess that's true.
The problem. You can always hear the snow caps when they have a slide to them in the box.
Yeah. Right. That's why I also do a gummy bear or a gummy worm all day long. I love them so much.
I'll warn you, listeners at home may be tempted to try my popcorn Reese's Pieces concoction. I would encourage you to, but it makes a huge mess. Mixing in a movie theater aisle is complicated. People do not like it, but you just got to go for it.
I've said this before, but I'm a master sneaking food in. I don't go snacks. I go real food. Like, I'm having a meal in there. I've done Taco Bell. I've done Wendy's. I've done Arby's. I'll say, and I've said this before, the master level sneak in. If you've done this, you can do anything. Is Boston Market, because you got some soup, you got like a plastic thing of turkey, you've got mashed potatoes involved. You have to keep everything leveled. Try sneaking that in. That's a master class. Okay, Karen said, "What are your best quote unquote in parentheses non traumatizing childhood memories? Best childhood memory, Annie. Let's start with you."
Okay, best childhood memory. My fifth birthday party was a surprise. We went and saw fireworks when we got back to, because my birthdays are on July 4th. When I got back to the house, my godparents had thrown a surprise Barbie birthday party for me.
That was awesome. That's fun.
Oh, wow.
Huck, are you going to remind us about that time your parents left town at Christmas time and
left you home?
You know, it's a very wealthy Chicago area neighborhood. That's
my best traumatizing. That's my best traumizing one. But she specifically said,
"Yeah." When I was a child, I nearly tortured two burglars to death. It was just heartwarming, though.
It was a memory.
I learned a lot about the real meaning of Christmas that year. Okay, what
happened
hers?
Again a year later in New York? It was crazy. It was extremely unlikely.
What best childhood memory?
I think my answer was, I got a few. I'm gonna say 10th birthday. We drove to the biggest town near my little Nebraska town where I grew up. It was Kearney, still a very small town, to watch.
Founded by Kearneys.
To watch Space Jam in the theater. Space Jam just came out. And then I ate so much pizza, stuffed crust cheese pizza from Pizza Hut that I threw up. And then went to the video game arcade and I got my first girl's phone number that I ever got.
Wow. That was a day.
It was amazing. I think that's the best day of my life to this day.
That is like a John Hughes movie. Just that one day.
You're not going to beat that. Yeah. Why have you not written that into a script? Right.
It's a beautiful day.
It's too pure for this world.
Eddie, what do you got, man?
There was this thing in fifth grade, and it was a big deal in fifth grade, but it was this place called Enterprise Village, and it was like this whole huge like city that had been built that everybody, like, it was like for students to learn like practical life lessons of like you know, how to write checks, how to have a job, how to like
this
buy
is your
things
best
with money.
Childhood memory.
Wait for it. So we work all year to get to go to our Enterprise Village Day, and it's a huge day, and we all finally get our jobs. And anybody want to take a gander at my job at Enterprise Village may have been?
Police.
I couldn't begin.
Choir director.
The mayor. And so
you were the mayor.
That I went to Enterprise Village, I had to do nothing. I didn't do anything. I made more money than anyone else, and I just walked around, and people wanted to talk to me and shake my hand and call me the mayor.
That's brilliant.
And then I made a speech at the end that I did off the cuff, even though my only job was to write it. And I will say that was probably one of my best childhood memories.
I'll tell you mine. Not a day goes by that I don't think about this. I think about it. I have like a, you know, I get this crazy sensation when I think about it. I had this youth pastor who's a real jerk. And before Easter one year,
Jesse,
he told me I could stab him with a steak knife. It was so great. The best day of my life. It was the best day. No, I don't have a single memory. I think, you know what I really liked about childhood was that I look back fondly is building like sketchy bike ramps. That was like a cool, yeah. I mean, I don't have like one single memory with them, but I loved it. There was nothing better than all the buddies in the neighborhood. Like, you know, you steal some wood from like a construction site and you make your sketchy X Games ramps. That was always fun. Okay, let's do, this one we can keep kind of quick. We don't have to answer it, but someone needs to help out Ray. Ray was recently up for a promotion that he didn't get, and he wants to know, how do I bounce back with grace? What would your advice to Ray be, guys?
I'm sorry to hear that, Ray. First of all, that's really tough. The tough setback.
I want to make jokes, but there's no joke. That's just a real bummer.
It's not, funny. That's hard.
The thing is, had this steak knife incident not happened, Ray would be a sociopath, so not a youth pastor.
There it was.
What's your advice for him?
I feel bad for that youth pastor. He's still tuning in because he thinks, they've stopped making jokes about me now.
Yeah.
And it's all good fun. It's all good fun. He turns around.
Hit the forward 30-second button like 6 or 7 times.
I've been there, right?
6 times, and he keeps running into his own memory.
But by the grace of God, there go I. And by that, I mean, I've never asked
so he
anyone
wants
to stab
bounce
me,
back
but,
with grace.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. You know what's great about Ray, though? Just the fact that he's asking the question and thinking about it means he's
already bouncing back.
He's already exactly who he should be.
That's exactly right.
I think the question is, how do I not be bummed out about it and feel like resentful? And I don't know what to tell you. Like, sometimes it's okay to be sad about it, and it's okay to feel resentful because maybe you should have gotten it. And it's okay to find other jobs because it's just a job. It's not real life. It's just work. So I'm not saying like quit your job, but I'm saying it doesn't make you less of a person. You are exactly who you should be.
And at the same time, I would say, I wonder if there's something to be learned about why you didn't get the spot. I have a friend who didn't get a promotion she should have gotten. And as she asked more questions, it ended up being not about her talent, but about the politics of the system. And that was really, the information was very helpful to her about moving forward. So I think when you can ask questions about why you didn't get the raise you wanted or the promotion you wanted, you get answers that help you better understand the situation.
Yeah. Here's what I would do, Ray, if I were you right now. This would be very, very fast. If your job allows this, and I would hope it does, I would assume there's some sort of protocol for this. I would take a random day off. Just put it on the calendar and take it off. And I'd make that Ray Day. And you do it. You do whatever you want to do all day. You don't judge it. You don't treat yourself. You don't judge it. You don't think that like give yourself just a little time to bounce back by having a full day of stuff you really love to do.
That's a great idea.
And hopefully that'll boost your mood a little bit while you think about Annie
and Ray. If you'll let us know what Ray Day is, we'll all celebrate it too. I'll happily do that.
Let us know. I'm in. You can call
I'll
in.
Take a day like that.
Yeah,
I would love a Ray Day.
I know we need to. We'll wrap on this one, and so this one's kind of serious. I like what we asked Ray there. I like the advice you guys gave. This one's kind of serious, and we'll end
Thanks,
here.
Dad.
And Brian said, "What's the one most important thing we can do in our day to day lives to further kingdom work?" That's Brian. I know my answer, Brian, and that is to graphically illustrate
the
brutality of.
For sure,
I'm joking. What would you guys? And we got to keep this relatively quick. One thing day to day you can do to as an expression of your face, further the kingdom. Annie, what would you?
I would say
Brian?
Really actively love the people around you.
Mm-hmm. I would say focus in on your own personal pursuit of holiness. Let that be just contagious. Work on yourself.
Huck, what would you say?
I would say you guys were both so ready to go, and now I feel like I'm on the spot. I would say be generous with your resources in a sacrificial way.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Mine's kind of. I would say.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not going to say anything dumb. I swear. I'll be real. I think all of those are great, but I think Eddie, this kind of goes through yours. Like, take time for like introspection every day. Like, really examine your motivations for doing stuff and see if they could be better. Like, I think that's something that I feel like that's something that a lot of people ignore. But in like the kind of like, with like the Enneagram and things like that are really valuable tools to like examine yourself and improve yourself, Eddie. I think, and like I said, I think for other people that need to really know some of these Bible stories, I think, acting them out, even if it involves Hurting whales and steak knives and whatever
we were
you need
so
to
close.
Do.
We were so
all
close.
Right. Sorry, guys.
All right, so that was Ask the Cast. One thing we haven't done in a while is editorial question of the week. So I want to go back to, I want to hear your feedback, and I think we got a good one this week. So without further ado, it's time for this week's
editorial question of the week. Hey.
We had Ray with his job story. How about this? I want people to write in and tell us, what is the funniest or most embarrassing thing that has ever happened to you in the workplace? Okay, we have a story about this youth pastor who had a bad day. Tell us about your funniest bad day. Yeah, your bad day at work. The worst, most funny, embarrassing thing that happened to you in the workplace. Send us to those on Twitter at Relevant Podcast. So send them our way. We'll take a look. We might read yours on the show. Well, hey, listen, I want to thank Johnny Swim for being on the show today. You can check out their album, Moonlight. It's available everywhere. Also, thank you to Samaritan Ministries. If you'd like to learn more about how you can be a part of the ministry, helping each other with care, visit SamaritanMinistries.org/relevant. Also, thank you to Squarespace. Be sure to head over to squarespace.com/relevant for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your site, use the offer code relevant to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter @relevant podcasts for content every day. Like us on Facebook @relevant. Hey, also, if you like the show, leave us a review. Give us those 5 stars. We crave and need your affirmation. I really, my self-worth,
generally as a podcast, we're fairly insecure. And
my
so,
self-worth is totally predicated on how many 5 stars reviews. So if you want me to feel great about myself and today's episode in particular, not horrible because this objectively went terrible with me hosting, leave me a 5-star
you
review.
You were great, actually,
Jesse.
I think it was really
a ditch right out of the gate. You don't have to lie. You guys don't have to lie. Hey,
no,
also,
you're so good,
hey, go check out our other podcasts. Check out Relevant Daily for getting current and news updates. Also, Unedited with Cameron. Fantastic long form conversations. If you like the our chat with Johnny Swim today, he recently had Abner on, who gave a lot of really cool, interesting stories about how him and Amanda met, his friendship with Steph Curry, and no big deal. A lot of cool stuff. Go check it out. It's Unedited with Cameron Schrang. And I think that's it for today, guys. Thanks for hanging. Let's hope the Schrang brothers make it back from Cuba.
Colors.
So the audiences won't be subjected to this hosted anymore. They should be back for Friday's show. All right. Well, thanks to Clark on the ones and twos. I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Tyler Huckabee.
I'm Eddie Koffoltz.
And I'm Annie F. Downs.
We'll see you guys on Friday.
Can I be basic with you?
Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
Guess who ever thought that a DiGiorno was delivery? No one ever.
Relevant Podcast Network.